Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today we're pleased to have back Dr. Daniel Benor, who is the author of Healing Research, as well as other books. But today we're concentrating on Volume 2 of Healing Research. Healing Research is a four-volume series that is probably the most thorough explanation and exploration of healing research and theories that I have ever come across, and I've been doing this radio show for about 17 years. Volume 1, which we spoke about previously, is Scientific Validation of Healing Revolution, and today we're going to be talking about Volume 2, which is Consciousness, Bioenergy, and Healing, with the more popular version entitled How Can I Heal What Hurts? And then the other two volumes, the Volume 3 is Science, Spirits, and Eternal Soul. And the fourth volume is Compendium of Theories and Practices in Spiritual Healing. Welcome, Dr. Benor. I certainly hope that you will join us in future radio shows for the discussion of Volume 3 and 4.
I'm very pleased to be back, Dr. Kolb, and look forward to this interview and future interviews.
Great. Well, in Volume 2, Volume 1 we talked a lot about the history of how the healing revolution came about and the various paradigms and the research behind some of the scientific validation of the new medicine that is and healing that is emerging. This is the popular edition is called How Can I Heal What Hurts, and it is almost an encyclopedic review of the various CAM procedures and what they're best at healing and the theories when known about how they work. So can you give, I should introduce you. You are a founding diplomat of the American Board of Holistic Medicine and a practicing psychiatric psychotherapist who is involving these other methods within the scope of your practice and your teachings. Is that correct?
In a nutshell, you've really encapsulated it well. My main focus at the moment is looking at how people can let go of pain, physical pain and emotional pain, in very quick and easy methods that they practice themselves. And this is based on some 40 years of continual refining of my psychotherapy in order to be able to empower people to help themselves.
And your book, 7 Minutes to Natural Pain Relief, Release, which is what we actually had a session on that book earlier, is the description of the WE technique. Is that correct?
That's correct. Anyone who's interested in that can get information at my website, which is www.paintap.com. It's a combination of eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, that's EMDR, mm-hmm. and emotional freedom techniques, EFT. It involves right and left stimulation of the body while focusing the mind on whatever the problem is, be it a physical pain or an emotional issue, be it a fear or a phobia or whatever, where the process releases whatever you want to release within minutes. And a lot of this is explained, actually, in the background that I have accumulated over the years of research summarized in the two books that we're talking about today. Perhaps I can just give an overview of the book,
sure.
Then we can go into some details.
That'd be great.
I started out collecting research because my medical colleagues were very skeptical when I told them that the body is composed of bioenergies as well as of matter.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it makes complete sense because I accept Einstein's theory that matter and energy are two sides of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Most of conventional science accepts that. Newtonian medicine has been very slow to absorb that the physical body is no different from a piece of metal or a stone, where you could examine that as a conventional physicist and see how heavy the stone is, see what happens when it falls from a certain height. Or you could examine it as a quantum physicist, and you would perceive the stone as more energy than as matter. The same thing applies to the human body. Conventional medicine, Newtonian medicine, is very good at dealing with what happens to the physical body, and the complementary therapists very often are dealing with the bioenergy body. So there's an information gap that this book fills,
mm-hmm.
providing research that helps you understand, first of all, the psychological mechanisms that shape our body's reactions to what we experience and shape our bioenergies as well. The second chapter in Consciousness, Bioenergy, and Healing reviews an enormous variety of complementary therapies from acupuncture to Zen.
Right.
looking at how these have accessed the bioenergy and the consciousness aspects of our being in order to improve our health on all levels. The third chapter looks at bioenergy medicine, meaning the specific mechanisms, the theories that explain how the bioenergies and the physical body interact. And the last chapter, the fourth chapter in Consciousness, Bioenergy, and Healing, is about what I call geobiological effects. This is where our biological energy field appears to interact with the energy fields of the Earth, of the electromagnetic spectrum in our electromagnetic world, where we have a lot of electromagnetic pollution and the body can be stressed by these energies, as well as looking at cosmic influences, which I was actually very skeptical about, and you know, maybe we'll talk about that towards the end here.
Sure.
Specifically looking at astrology, where there's been research confirming some of the astrological predictions,
mm-hmm.
And the basis for their predictions.
Yes, astrology actually can be very, very informative, especially when crisis points are reached, either for a country or an individual or even the planet. It's
yes.
very interesting that it can pinpoint to the day crisis points. One of my patients had given me a subscription to The Mountain Astrologer, and in August of 2001, there was an article in it that said, I think Mars was conjuncting Saturn on 9/11/01, and they predicted a terrorist event that would lead to war.
Wow.
On that particular day. Now, it didn't say it was in New York, but perhaps if they'd done a little bit more calculation, they could have pinpointed the place.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
It's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it's very, very precise science, if done correctly. I'm not sure that all astrologers are working with the exact numbers that they need to work with to get to that degree of accuracy, but it's because there's many different systems of astrology, as you know.
Yes. And while we're on the subject, maybe I can just summarize what was most impressive to me in my research in this area. I was actually rather skeptical about astrology, feeling that it was more the astrologer's intuition that was being
right.
manifested than any science behind it, or any cosmological realities, so to speak. And I came across research by a Frenchman named Michel Gauquelin, G-A-U-Q-U-E-L-I-N. This is a meticulous scientist who reviewed 25,000 birth records in France to see whether the predictions of the astrological chart of a person about their career could be validated.
Mm-hmm.
So they would take people who were successful in their field and people who were just average in their field of endeavor and compare the charts of the two groups of people. And they found very high correlations, saying that the birth chart of a person was a predictive, a valid, scientifically, a statistically proven predictor of their success in their chosen field. Now, the scientific community thought that this had to be some sort of error. They looked through the methodology and they couldn't fault the methodology, but they raised really marginal questions about the possibility that perhaps the birth records in France were somehow different and skewed the results.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as weak as the criticism was, Gauquelin went ahead and reviewed 5,000 birth records in each of five different countries in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to Germany and Netherlands, and I don't remember which other countries other than France, repeating his study and finding the same results.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the scientific community just shook its head and went on happily ignoring all of
right.
this. Until Hans Eysenck, who's a meticulous psychologist and who was a confirmed skeptic about this, said, look, there has to be some error here. I'm going to repeat this myself
mm-hmm.
and show that it just cannot be.
Mm-hmm.
And when he repeated it, he actually ended up validating, yet a third time
mm-hmm.
that the birth charts of people predict their success in their career. So going back to Gauquelin, Gauquelin then reviewed his series and he found something most interesting. He found that people who had a natural birth had these predictions hold for their career choices.
Mm-hmm.
People who were born by cesarean birth
mm-hmm.
did not have that correlation.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
And his interpretation to me is even more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He says that the only way he can understand this is that people actually choose the time of their birth that will be favorable for their career in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So that those who are not allowed to come into the world at the time of their choice miss that opportunity of having the cosmic influence that will favor their career choice.
That's fascinating. It really is.
It's really fascinating, yes.
There's also, I think the lack of understanding in the regular scientific community is that they don't understand how positions of planets could possibly influence things. But Casey actually has a very good explanation that helped me understand it. And I've also read Esoteric Astrology, which helped me understand it in the Alice Bailey materials. But it's not so much the position of the planets that are important, it's the energy behind the position of the planets. In other words, the planets are third-dimensional representations that are being projected from a higher realm. We might call it universal mind or whatever we want to call it, but they're simply like we are. They are projections from another dimension. So when the positions of these projections are in a certain alignment, that reflects a state of beingness that is either favorable or unfavorable for certain things to occur, including careers and whatever. I mean, it's, you know, you hear that, I don't know if you've ever experienced it in your life, but, you know, they say bad things happen in threes.
Yes.
That's another thing that is, I think, involved in this energetic, pattern. You would call it an energetic pattern in the higher realm that then projects onto the third dimension certain patterns. So the patterns of the planet reflect a higher pattern that is either conducive or non-conducive to certain energies coming in. And I would agree with you that one of the most important things is when we come in, when we choose to come into this world is extremely important in terms of the energies that then we are able to harness for ourselves during our lifetime. And it's interesting to me that you have Patissen drips, you have C-sections, you have, you know, the OBGYN doctor doesn't want to come back in, so, you know, things are moved around, C-sections are scheduled. We have quite a bit of manipulation of that time, which may actually be very, very, very important not to manipulate.
Yes. I like your observations, Dr. Kolb, about the patterns and the energies that seem to guide our lives.
Mm-hmm.
This is a consistent finding across many of the complementary therapies that have long-standing, you know, thousands of years or hundreds of years traditions behind them. If you look at acupuncture, many of the practitioners who have studied this in depth, you know, not just studying the acupuncture points, but looking to the acupuncture theory behind it,
mm-hmm.
find that there are certain times of day when certain of the acupuncture points along the different meridians are more active and more susceptible to their interventions.
Right.
And so some acupuncturists will invite a person to come at an odd hour of day or night
mm-hmm.
in order to maximize the effect of their treatment, because they know that that particular meridian that they need to address will be more active at that part of the day.
Right.
Another example of that is in homeopathy. Edward Whitmont, Whitmont, was a Jungian analyst as well as a homeopath. He wrote several books looking at the conjunction of matter and meaning that was involved in the remedies. That helped me to understand how some of these remedies could work. It seems that there is a pattern to certain substances that resonates with the pattern of health and illness in people and in animals. So when the alignment or the harmony of the energetics is out of whack in a person's being,
mm-hmm.
and you introduce an element that has that pattern that would restore the balance and the pattern, a person can be rebalanced into a better state of being. Whitmont's writings really are the deepest that I've ever seen on homeopathy, and helped me to understand some of the ways that these remedies work. But then again, there's consciousness that's involved. So shifts of consciousness can occur along with the ingestion of certain substances that have certain patterns of consciousness, not just the pattern that matches the physical state that we want to restore. And going even further, there are homeopaths today who are developing remedies very much as flower essence remedies have been developed through imprinting the intent of the flower pattern or the homeopathic remedy pattern on the water, which then carries that pattern as a healing influence to the person who takes it. In that regard, the most interesting remedies that I've come across, homeopathic remedies, were developed in England and tested extensively in Africa. There's an article by Henry van der Zee, Z-E-E, in the International Journal of Healing and Caring, a free online journal, reviewing treatments of chronic illnesses such as AIDS, malaria, TB, diabetes, using remedies that were created through conscious intent. They didn't use a substance as the basis for the homeopathic remedy. They imprinted the water with their intent. And the intent was different from the usual homeopathic remedy, which is individualized to each person's pattern. These remedies are individualized to the disease pattern instead. So they take all of the symptoms known to be present in a disease, and they develop a remedy that reharmonizes the person to clear those symptoms. And they report people with AIDS whose cell counts were way down and they came up. And this was after they had exhausted the benefits of the conventional medications. People with diabetes who were insulin dependent and were able to get off their insulin. People with malaria and TB whose illnesses were cleared. And myself being involved in psychotherapy and with we helping people deal with their post-traumatic stress disorders, it was most interesting that they have a remedy for post-traumatic stress. Now, in Africa, there have been horrendous genocidal waves of murders and rapes and dislocations, people having to just relocate and going through refugee camps and all of the horrors that these traumas involve. And these remedies have been able to clear their trauma, oftentimes very rapidly. So when we go into the energetic remedies and we look at patterns of problems, we have access to ways of helping people that go way beyond what conventional medicine can offer, which is why I wrote these books.
Yeah, I think the two things come to mind. One is that in Tibetan medicine, it's not uncommon for the doctor to give the patient a mantra that is written on a piece of paper, and the patient goes and meditates on the mantra and is healed. Very similar. The idea that was expressed in esoteric healing by Master DK is disease as a result of inhibited soul life, and I would suspect that the homeopathic intents, the Tibetan meditation mantras, and any other really fairly simple key that unlocks the energy that is available from the higher levels, the soul level, the higher self level, the fifth dimensional level, if you will, that there's probably nothing that can't be healed, including death, because You know, Jesus came and showed us that even death can be overcome. So I would suspect that we're looking at some keys that unlock the energies of spontaneous remission. And you have quite a good review of spontaneous remission in volume two as well. This is probably the medicine of the future, is how to remove the blocks from the higher realms of healing energy that we all have.
And yeah, Susan, you have really touched on something so important. We often find that there are blocks in our lives to the flows of energy, to our interactions in harmonious ways with other people, blocks to our being content or happy or relaxed, mm-hmm. because we're wound up, we are uptight over things that we have swallowed down because they were too much to bear when we experienced the traumas that caused these. There are so many ways in which the energetic patterns can get disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you point out, a mantra could change it. Healing intervention, as in a therapeutic touch or healing touch or Reiki intervention or prayer, could change it.
Distant healing can change it as well.
Yes.
Many reports of tumors regressing or disappearing entirely with nothing but distant healing.
Yes, and I'm actually collecting these remarkable recovery reports on a website that is surprisingly called remarkablerecoveries.com. And so if you know of any, or if any of the listeners know of some really unusual recoveries in response mm-hmm. to various interventions, I'd love to hear from them. And they can contact me through the PainTap, www.paintap.com website, where we found, for instance, a report of a woman who had scleroderma.
Mm-hmm.
For listeners who aren't familiar with that, it's a thickening of the skin that in some cases is a mild problem, but in severe cases, the skin becomes so thick that they can't even receive an injection, that you can't draw blood mm-hmm. With a needle because the needle won't penetrate the skin. The skin becomes so stiff that they can't bend their joints and they end up just barely able to walk around.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually their inner organs start stiffening. And we have a report of a woman who was at the point where her esophagus was starting to stiffen and she could only swallow soft foods. And her doctor, who assessed her for disability, predicted that she had between 2 months and 2 years to live.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I won't use the language, but with a very emphatic statement, you know, I am not accepting this death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
She went online, and she discovered various problems that she could correct, biochemical problems, immunological problems. And these lightened and slowed the progress of the illness, but didn't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got to emotional freedom technique
mm-hmm.
and realized that she was able to release her fears of being unsafe in the world, whereupon her body no longer needed to armor itself
mm-hmm.
and her disease regressed. And this is highly, highly unusual. I mean, in conventional medicine, it's virtually unheard of. She then went on and taught another woman to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in this article, she sent me some pictures, one of herself where she was so stiff that she couldn't even change her facial expression.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And after a year and a few months of doing the emotional freedom techniques, she shows a picture of herself having had a 2-mile hike up a mountain, and she's radiant and smiling at the top of this mountain. It's just so startlingly, you know, beautiful to see what a person's determination can do in finding their own remedy and in pursuing it and applying it.
I have a fair number of patients with scleroderma that begin to develop because of silicone and, I believe, chemical and biotoxicity. And they all have an immune deficit. They require detox, treatment of the funguses and the bacterial components. And one of the patients with scleroderma that I'm treating now also found that there was a very, very severe recurrence of the disease when she was around animals. So it might have been an allergic triggering of probably causing an immune drop. In other words, you know, when she went into a home, a relative's home with animals, she got much, much worse. So, I think the way we understand this is anything that lowers the body's energy also lowers its immunity. So putting chemicals in the body with silicone implants or biotoxins around infected foreign bodies, that's my model for fibromyalgia, because we have so many cures of fibromyalgia after we take the implants out and detox the body and bring the immune system back up. But, you know, implants don't have to be one single thing like breast implants. They can also be multiple silicone in the diet. You know, we eat silicones on our pills, it's in our food, it's in our skincare products. It can be a slower poisoning with plastics and chemicals. It doesn't have to be just one big plastic blob of silicone. So I think as a society, we're lowering our immunity. We're having a large amount of endocrine disruption because of these plastics and because of other toxins in the environment, chemical toxins particularly. And so doing things to help your immune system recover, detox is critical. Getting rid of I think that's why exercise works so well. You and I attended the same course, so we know when we took our initial boards for holistic medicine how impressive exercise was in helping almost all conditions. That's probably because of the detox and oxygenation functions of exercise.
Yes.
So you truly, you know, when we went to medical school, we were taught that, you know, if you have this, then you give that. You know, if you have this, then you do that. It's not like that. It's the holistic treatment of medicine. The holistic treatment of the patient in medicine is incredibly complex. You have to pay attention to the endocrine system, the immune system, the psychological system. It's just how thoughts and emotions impact the immune system is tremendous, as you know. Didn't Barbara Bush's hair turn gray overnight after the death of her child? Isn't that interesting?
Yes, I've heard numbers of reports like that.
Right, you know.
Just not to overlook one important element that this one woman discovered,
mm-hmm.
As we're talking about the scleroderma,
mm-hmm.
She found that she had very high titer for Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm, right.
And she needed to treat that with unusually high, for medical standards, doses of antibiotics for a prolonged period of time, but that also made a significant difference in her recovery.
Well, many of the autoimmune diseases are found to be intracellular bacteria at the basis of it. Rheumatoid arthritis, at least half the cases are intracellular mycoplasma. Now, many of my patients, though, they do have scleroderma, they do have rheumatoid arthritis, they do have Lyme disease, but I'm unable to treat them with prolonged antibiotics because they can't tolerate it because of the yeast and mold overgrowth in their body.
Right.
So I've been forced to use biophysics as well as some biochemistry to treat these patients, which is interesting. Because you can use biophysics to clear out pathogens as well.
Yes.
And I think that the future of medicine is biophysics, because we just have way too, it's pointed out in your book, I just read it a little bit ago, how many not medication errors, but just normal medication doses in the hospital have led to fatal or near-fatal outcomes, just of giving the regular medicine. And so Osler had that great quote, you know, that the patient has to recover once from the disease and second from the medicine.
Yes.
And I went to Hopkins, where I actually took a class on the history of medicine, so I studied Osler in great detail. And do you know what Osler's third rule was?
Go on.
Well, the first rule is never stop a treatment that's working.
Right.
Okay, the second rule I forget. I don't know if you remember it. But the third rule is never send your patient to a surgeon. Which I thought was great. Of course, that's not true these days, because surgery has gotten much better with anesthesia. But
Well, I have to tell you, though, some of the indications for surgery really need reevaluation.
Oh, they do.
There was recently a control study of knee a keyhole intervention where they clean out the cartilage that
right.
has been damaged.
Mm-hmm.
They did real surgery and they did pretend surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Where they just did the incision, and the person had been under anesthesia, so they didn't know,
right.
You know, that they hadn't actually had the intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And people who had just had the placebo treatment improved as much as those who had the actual intervention,
mm-hmm.
which says that the theory behind the treatment can't be accurate. They're saying that if you have degenerated cartilage, that is what causes your knee pains.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can have a sham treatment produce the same recuperation, and it wasn't just that the pain went away. They had some people who were out playing basketball,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they hadn't been able to walk without pain.
So their cartilage regenerated.
Well, they didn't do that sort of follow-up.
Yeah, well, we have to assume their cartilage regenerated because, you know, it most likely did. But again,
one would expect that from the
right.
dramatic improvements.
Well, again,
there's another step,
yeah.
and that is just the intent.
Right, to heal.
To
heal.
Clear whatever is behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked with numbers of people who were either scheduled for surgery or who had actually had knee replacement surgery and still had pain.
Right.
Where the psychological intervention of we dealing with their pain
mm-hmm.
cleared the pain despite the fact that there was x-ray evidence of severe pathology in the knee.
Right. And as is shown on MRIs of the back, the degree of degeneration and the pain do not always correlate at all. And we have we have a saying in surgery, lonely is the surgeon in the belly looking for pain.
Lovely.
That is.
Well, what I was most impressed with in terms of the bioenergetic interventions in this regard was a report from Germany of a person who, a young worker who had severe rheumatoid arthritis and x-ray evidence of this in the spine and other joints, leading to 100% disability.
Mm-hmm.
This young man went to the Philippines and had psychic surgery and found that he was now able to do anything that he wanted, including lifting heavy loads. So being honest, he went back to his doctor and he said, look, I need you to, you know, observe how I can bend, I can lift. You know, and I'm really wanting to return to work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really, you know, feeling good about having this disability.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor said, well, you know, your x-rays look so bad that I couldn't take responsibility for approving you're going back to work. Let's do another x-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And the x-rays hadn't changed a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the person's functionality was totally transformed.
Right.
Which says that our theory of some of the disease processes has to be corrected in the light of our new evidence from complementary therapies of various sorts.
Well, I think, you know, I think we go back to the idea that there are other ways to open up energetic sources that increase immunity, can help modulate pain responses. It's well known that if something is low energy and not moving and not very healthy, it tends to hurt. You know, think of a foot that is struggling for blood supply. I mean, it's incredibly painful. But if you increase the energy, the blood flow, the oxygenation, the immunity to that extremity, chances are that the pain will be relieved.
Yes.
And plus, we have no idea what the higher vibratory injections, I would say, that occur during these healings, like the psychic surgery, which I've experienced myself. I don't know whether I told you, but I had a very large tumor over the size of a grapefruit that was an external fibroid that was sitting on my urethra, causing bladder problems, especially infections. And but my internal guidance told me not to have surgery, but instead to seek out Gregorio, who was a psychic surgeon from the Philippines. And I did that plus a couple of other things, including some release work psychologically, because it was interesting. I knew the exact minute that I developed the pattern that caused that tumor. It was a threat to my femininity. I mean, I knew the minute it occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And then that progressed right after that very rapidly. Isn't that interesting?
And how did it work for you, having the
surgery? It's gone. Well, I mean, the tumor's gone.
Uh-huh.
It's not symptomatic anymore. I can't feel it anymore because, of course, I could feel it. It was off to the side and it was rather large. But releasing the energy that caused it was extremely important.
Yes.
And
I had I'd love to correspond with you about that if you're open to.
Sure.
Have you ever written that up?
No, I haven't.
I would love to have that as a, you know, report of remarkable recovery.
Well, what's really funny, I don't know if you were ever interviewed by Dr. Richard Clofine. He's my partner. He's a GYN doctor. He's holistic GYN. And we were doing a radio show, and we were interviewing somebody on, GYN issues and fibroids. And Rick is my GYN doctor. And so he's sitting there saying, on the radio, he's saying, well, I've never seen a really large fibroid totally disappear with holistic therapy. And I looked at him, and I said, what about mine, Rick? And he says, oh, yeah, yours did.
Wonderful.
Isn't that hilarious? Oh, yeah, I forgot about you.
So what you raise here is so important in terms of psychological issues that can manifest into the body. My understanding of these is that they are our inner self inviting us to release whatever the psychological
mm-hmm.
issue, usually a traumatic issue.
Oh, it was.
Was.
Yeah, it was a traumatic. It wasn't a major traumatic issue. It was just a threat to my femininity.
Yeah.
And you know, from a person who wasn't very nice, and you know, I don't tend to be. Well, most surgeons, as you know, don't tend to be easily hurt. So I don't go into that mode. I mean, I don't allow myself to become hurt by what people say, especially people who aren't very nice. I basically rejected it mentally, but evidently it still got a seed. You know,
yes.
it and the seed formed a fibroid. You know, I did the normal things. I mean, I went on Indiplex to decrease, you know, because I was in perimenopause at the time. So I decreased my estrogens through Indiplex, or the estrogens that could form fibroids. I changed my diet so that I didn't have so many exogenous estrogens in chicken and stuff. Mm-hmm. But none of that by itself works. And I also took high doses of maitake mushrooms, which are known to decrease fibroids by one half, just chemically. Mm-hmm. But again, the physical, because the cause did not originate from the physical realm, like it wasn't because I was taking estrogen that caused it.
Right.
They can't make it disappear completely. They can only they can only reduce it in size and symptoms. Now it wasn't bleeding because it was external, but but it was causing, you know, you can imagine a tumor that size when you're a surgeon.
Sure.
You know, not a good situation. So what I did was I did the, I believe the psychic surgeon removed some of the energy, or helped me remove some of the energy. And then, of course, I did some of my own work to undo that injury. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's interesting that in your book you have many examples of that, you know, where a child is, one that comes to mind is a child is drawing on the wall and the mother comes in and, you know, says, bad child. And so the child thinks that the child did something wrong, doesn't realize it's drawing on the wall that's bad, not drawing that's wrong, you know, all those things. But it just takes a second to put in a very negative seed for disease to occur around.
Yes.
And first and it may be psychological, but then it can be physical later, you know.
Yes. And it can be, you know, when it starts early, it can end up a lifetime of misperception of how we are in the world, or our expectations that we're unlovable because we're a bad boy.
Because we drew a picture on the wall.
when actually, you know, it was just the bad behavior that was upsetting.
Yeah.
I had an example, a similar example, just a week ago. A woman volunteered for a demonstration at a workshop, and had just had her cast removed from her wrist, where she had multiple fracture, and the fracture had healed reasonably, but the wrist was a level 8 pain out of 10. Within 10 minutes, in front of a whole group of people, she was able to just listen to what the wrist was telling her through its symptom. And the symptom can be a pain or a tightness, or it can be a fibroid or a growth of some other sort. It can be a vulnerability to immune problems. But this woman in 10 minutes was able to connect with stresses in her life. She felt that she couldn't ask people to help her in her family.
Lack of support is risk problems. I guarantee it
wasn't that they weren't willing.
Right.
It was that she was hesitant to ask for the help.
Right. Isn't
so
that
her wrist was kicking up a fuss and saying, come on, woman, you know, ask for the help so that
I can heal.
you're not feeling so stressed.
Right. It's and, you know, and that's the spiritual medicine part of things. Each part of the body speaks to us in a similar language.
Yes.
But with different messages, which is very interesting.
Yes. And another piece that I'd like to mention from the books, in both of the versions of this book, the professional edition, the Consciousness, Bioenergy, and Healing, where there are hundreds of research references, and I cringe a little bit every time I mention that, because we had a Microsoft Word just before it went to print, and we didn't realize we'd lost some of the references. But it has about 1,500 references. And in the second edition, the How Can I Hear What Hurts, which is for the layperson, it doesn't have so many research references, but has 100 extra pages on different ways for self-healing. Mm-hmm. One of the most important pieces in the book is the stress inventory that people can look at to see, are there issues in their lives that may be accumulating that might predispose them to serious illness?
Mm-hmm.
This is an inventory that was developed looking back on people who had serious illness, mm-hmm. to see in the 24 months prior to the development of the symptoms what had been going on in their lives.
Right.
They found that the most severe stress for a person was the death of a child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
After that was death of a marital partner, mm-hmm. or a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Other stresses could be separation or divorce or mm-hmm. leaving your job, even if it's for a better job.
Right.
Marriage is also a stress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people sometimes don't realize,
right.
All the factors that are piling up in their lives. When you reach a certain level of stress, you are at serious risk for serious illness.
That's true.
When you've developed serious illness, if you look back on the previous 24 months,
mm-hmm.
you will often discover that you were under more stress than you realized.
Right.
Releasing these stresses, and not just our physical, you know, stress reaction, but our emotional reaction,
mm-hmm.
converting a worry into a concern,
mm-hmm.
or converting a trauma into a life lesson,
mm-hmm.
is something that people can do with the self-healing that I'm teaching now with WHEE.
Right. Well,
I think that this method and other methods that are detailed in these books,
mm-hmm.
can transform, you know, medical practice.
Oh, it really can. Dr. Bernard, we're at the end of our time, unfortunately, but I do want to encourage people to look at your Healing Research Volume 2, How Can I Heal What Hurts, for the lay public, and Consciousness, Bioenergy, and Healing for the practitioners. And I look forward to having you back on to discuss the Volume 3 and Volume 4.
I likewise look forward to speaking with you again, Dr. Colbert. It's a real pleasure talking with someone so knowledgeable. You know, your interviewers, your interviews have another level to them that, you know, I really enjoy.
Well, thank you. I do, too. That's why I do the show. I speak with the best minds in the world, and together, hopefully, we can bring in a new medicine that will work a lot better and also get people more spiritually evolved, which is probably the goal of all of this. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I've been interviewing Dr. Daniel Bernard on his 4 volumes of healing research. Today we reviewed Volume 2. Please join us next week, where we will be interviewing Jeff Group, Telementation, and the author of Talking to My Cells. This is Dr. Susan Kolb. Have a great week.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute. You look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plastikos.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone skin and contour the body. Endermology by Plastikos feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plastikos, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plastikos at 770-457-4677. Plastikos Endermology Skin Toning and Body Contouring, 770-457-4677.
I'm sick and tired of always feeling sick and tired, and I don't want to take a lot of prescription drugs to feel better. Isn't there a better way?
Millennium Healthcare offers natural solutions to your health problems. Millennium Healthcare is qualified healthcare professionals working with you to restore your health and wellness. Whether it's a caring physician, one of our natural providers, or our natural apothecary, Millennium Healthcare can help. For more information, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012.